just try to pick it up from about where I was. But yeah, I mean, they had set up the thing to be built around him. I mean, even leading up to his title run, it was, you know, the promotion was being set up for him to get the torch passed and then to carry on this company. And it didn't click, and they had to go back to Kobashi and Misawa, and they ran those poor guys until one was crippled and one was dead. And then the promotion died. And it's just, I mean, to me, it's just so sad. I mean, it's this promotion that had been, and obviously not Noah itself, but, you know, the legacy of this promotion that lasted for decades. And the point, the guy that was going to be the torch passed to him, and I don't blame him entirely for this. I mean, as you bring up, like, the circumstances were not very good. But, you know, when I think of Akiyama's career, that's what I think of. I think of the poor guy that was going to be the you know, the passing on this great legacy, and then the promotion died.
I'm looking at it here. He held the belt for 7 months in 2001. Sorry, 2001 into 2002. And he had 3 defenses.
I got 254 days here.
July 27th to start of April. So that would be January, February, March.
That'd be 8.5, 9 months.
Eight 8 months. 8 and a bit. Because you got August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, and then a few days.
And
7
June,
days from April.
His name.
And 4 days from. we're really picking us.
That's why they pay us the big money.
Picking hairs in the Jun Akiyama argument here. But
it was 8.5. God damn it!
His whole fantasy comes down to 3 weeks.
Look, I don't feel passionate about Lee, honestly.
It just
makes me sad.
He had that reign there, but I was gonna say that you talked about how they went with Kobashi and Misawa, and I think the time where Akiyama was ready, and where he was seen by, I think that whole early, the first year of Noah was really weird because Kobashi got injured and went out, and that obviously screwed up a lot of plans. And just in general, it was strange. They had guys coming in. They were doing tournaments. It was just not. It felt like a promotion just kind of trying to start up, and it was like as they were starting up, Akiyama just happened to be the guy holding the belt, but it wasn't really a solidified thing. And then in so late 2002 and then through 2003, mainly because of Kobashi's reign, how good that was, that's when the promotion really, and obviously huge credit to Kobashi for that, and he did some, like, I'm not saying Akiyama is anywhere near the level of Kenta Kobashi as a Hall of Famer, because Kenta Kobashi, in my opinion, might be the greatest
wrestler
ever. That
would be a very good argument.
Yeah, Kenta Kobashi might be the greatest wrestler ever. He was definitely capable of doing something here that Jun Akiyama wasn't, and that was taking this promotion that was kind of in this kind of startup phase. It was kind of struggling to find its identity and get off the ground. He took it by the stranglehold and gave it 2 great years, and it was on fire there. As you noted, they were doing really well, and I think that if Akiyama, because Akiyama had been built up really well as the Kobashi reign was going on, and he was starting to get real big reactions from the fans and seen as the top guy next to Kobashi, and if they had made that change in at the 04 Dome, I think that would have been the point where we really got to see if Akiyama could have carried it more, or if he couldn't, but he didn't get that chance. So I don't know. I think when he did get the belt in 2006, at that stage it had already lost a good bit of momentum. The Takeshi Rikkyo reign, that really sort of hurt things. He was always in a tough position following Kobashi. For a lot of reasons, Noah dropped down a bit from where it had been in the earlier part of the decade. So, yeah, I just think when he was ready, they didn't go with him. And again, I think he might have been the guy who made that decision. So I don't know how much that falls as a criticism to him. But I see the argument you're making. It's the argument we've heard about Akiyama. It's the kind of thing that's been penned against him. It's the thing that probably caused him to drop off the ballot before when he was on. Although I think he's done significant things to add to his candidacy since he dropped off the ballot, which is important. I see him as a Hall of Famer, and I think I've exhausted all I can say supporting him, but I'll be doing a write up on him at some point during the week, and I'll make sure to have various numbers and things in place on that before I do it.
You know what we should
Justin,
do?
Justin, Jun Akiyama. Break the tie, motherfucker. Who's your bread and butter here, Justin? You're not appearing on any Todd Martin shows.
I think I lost you guys again. What happened?
You were just saying that you think Jun Akiyama is a surefire Hall of Famer.
You know,
my other surefire. The painful thing is my other guy who I think is pretty much a lock is another guy who I think Todd disagrees with me on. I believe last year he went with a no on this guy, and that's Gran Hamada.
I mean, until Shohei Giant Baba is in, I don't think I can vote for any of these people. So
you're putting all your eggs in George Gordienko, aren't you, this year?
Yep, I'm the guy in the bunny suit.
And I want to bring this back around to a U.S. candidate because my voice is actually. Do you know what?
Do you need to
give?
Take a pause,
Justin.
For the cause.
Justin, I want you to veer us in our next direction. How about that?
Okay. And here, veer's for me.
Put on your Justin Shapiro show hosting hat and take us in our next direction.
Okay. And I'll tell you what we can do next year is we'll just have you tape those separate, like Meltzer has been doing the WrestleMania things, and then we'll just drop it in. We'll just drop it in.
Sounds good.
And we'll post-produce it, and then we will reply. Who else is there? Who's a wrestler?
The Rock and Roll Express? You mentioned being fond of them?
I am. I mean, rock and roll in general. What am I stretching for? Oh, you want me to just lead a discussion? I don't have my hosting hat on. Let me get my web service host to do it. Yes, the Rock and Roll Express. Richard Morton, late of the York Foundation. And then Robert Gibson, of course, had the broken leg. And who was there? Tommy Rich, maybe? For a match on a VHS tape I rented. So, you know, you look at some of the metrics behind drawing in a territory, going from...
And the concert. Don't forget the concert.
Stop! You're killing me here!
So, yes. Definitely for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, we want to do the Clash of Champions.
What? Justin, what drugs are you doing here?
Sertraline and no.
You're getting too into this rock and roll lifestyle.
I was riding the roads too hard.
You were running up and down
exactly.
The roads too hard, too fast.
Yep. Which brings me to a point? Question mark. I'm sorry, I panicked under pressure. But yeah, 3 or 4 hours ago, we talked about the pressure of these 50% guys, like now or never. So this will be a good referendum. Like, is it really going to happen? And if not, then truly, 'twas never meant to be.
Yeah, I think for me, it's I've just... last year, they were close for me. Like, I thought about voting them. I didn't. They were not quite my Carlos Colon pressed the lead off my ballot as I'm about to send to Dave, But there was moments where they were pretty much on there, and that I went without them instead. But I think this year, it's just as the year's gone on, I've started to really respect how much influence they had, just a bit more than I did previously. My opinion of them as workers hasn't changed. I think they're very, very good. I don't think they're the be-all and end-all of tag team wrestling like people seem to think. To me, they're by no means the greatest in-ring tag team of all time, not even close. But they were very good workers, and their influence cannot be denied. And I think, drawing-wise, I'd say since the last Hall of Fame vote and discussion, I've seen the both the Crockett and Mid-South DVDs. They were both sort of late last year, and both of those really, really made the Rock and Roll Express came off as draws and appeal to those crowds. They came off really well on those releases, and I think I'm going to end up going yes with them this year, and I hope that if I do that, they do get in, then I can be like, hey, I got the Rock and Roll Express in the Hall of Fame. But they were just waiting for me to get on board. To be honest, I think they will get in, regardless of whether I vote. I think they got close enough that they will be one of the ones where, like with Cologne, the 50, being so close to 60 will get them the boost from the 50% rule this year. The only thing with Cologne is, and we can transition to a few other candidates here, Cologne, I think, might be slightly hurt by the beefing up of the miscellaneous category this year. There's a few more names on there, and I think as more names appear on that, people will shy away from voting in it. I think I will probably be doing that myself this year, because I don't think I'm going to be able to do enough research on all those other candidates to feel good about ignoring them to vote Cologne. Or not ignoring them is too strong a word, but not going deep into their candidacy enough to just to vote Carlos Cologne. So I can see myself being one of the people who ends up not going with Cologne this year just because of not wanting to do a disservice to all those other guys. Like previously, that section of the ballot has been smaller, and I felt I understood enough about the other guys that I was happy to go with Cologne, and I was okay with not yes voting the others. But this year, I'm not sure if I'll do that. And now, then, as it happens, he might get in this year, and then it won't be an issue, and I won't need to vote in that category again. But Todd, you're obviously a big supporter of Carlos Colon. Is there anyone else in that category you've been looking at that you think you might throw a vote at this year?
Nope. Here's the thing. Like, they've tried to tie in some other people from sort of different regions, but the bulk of that category and the idea behind that category is, I think, the valid idea that you want to represent Jim Barnett's Australian territory, because it was the old WCW, because it was a very successful territory. But the key to the whole thing is that it is already represented in the Hall of Fame. That was a different territory. That was a territory that had a short boom period, that had tours of the country, but it wasn't like Japan where you had these key foreigners, where you had the foreigners against the key big local guys. It was mostly foreign guys against other foreign guys. And there were certainly some guys that were in that territory more than others, but pretty much all of the top guys of that period who were connected with the NWA and Barnett were there. So it's not like there are these big iconic, you know, members of the territory that were left out. I mean, the guys that are on the ballot in that region are more.
Just to clarify, what you're saying is guys who are already in the Hall of Fame, like big name guys, were big participants in the Australia territory.
That's exactly what I'm saying. And the guys that are in there are, for the most part, the top stars who happened to work there for a significant period, who weren't quite big enough to get in otherwise. So to me, like, I think Killer Carl Cox is a solid candidate, but Mark Lewin is sort of the perfect example of what I'm talking about, in that he was a big star all over the place, but he wasn't a Hall of Fame level guy, but he was more prominent than some other guys in the Australia territory. So it's like, well, you know, you're bringing in Australian guys, guys that were in the Australian territory, that is, that weren't already in from that period. And it's like, I don't know, the whole thing to me is not really it's sort of a unique territory. And I don't think it works like a lot of territory where you want to sort of let guys in. I mean, the territory that I think, it's not even territory, the region that I think continues to be underrepresented is Mexico. In that,
just before you get onto that, as sure. I do, that is something we definitely need to talk about. I just want to say on Australia, is there a lot of footage of the Australia stuff? I've never come across any.
Not that I know of. A buddy of mine who will send stuff to Dave from time to time, named Graham Cameron. He sent me for a period of a couple of years. He sent me this great book that had all these old results from that period, and he would send me newspaper articles and whatnot. So there's a fair amount of like stuff written about the territory, but I don't think that there's a lot of video footage of that territory.
Hmm. Okay. So Mexico. I'll let you say what you're going to say in a sec. I just got to say on Mexico, They've beefed up this already stacked section this year with the addition of a couple of trios. So, yeah, let the people know about that.
Yeah, I was going to sort of tie it into Australia, and I'll get into the trios as well, is to sort of contrast it to Australia, is that Mexico has its distinct candidates, and that the top stars on the Mexican ballot are guys that, you know, may have worked a little bit elsewhere, but, you know, they're predominantly, you know, Mexican stars. That's where they, you know, became stars. And that's a place where wrestling is very popular. It's not sort of this, you know, guys who sort of made a couple tours in Mexico for a period, or even, you know, had success in Mexico for a while, but then, you know, moved elsewhere for long periods of time. It's sort of, it's a different deal. And the problem with Mexico, in my opinion, is that is the cartels. But putting that aside, is
GWF heel group.
Well, I think all Mexicans would agree with that. But I mean, like the problem is that, like, from the beginning, I think they were underrepresented, and so unlike a lot of other areas where you had some strong candidates and some weak candidates, The Mexican region is just so stacked with solid candidates that the competition is so stiff, and it's hard to distinguish between a lot of these iconic figures that belong in, you know, from top rudos like Cien Caras and Villano Tercero, you know, L.A. Park, who's been one of the most famous characters in Lucha for decades. As you mentioned, Los Brazos are now on, although I don't think they're one of the stronger candidates this year.
The other trio, it was Los Misioneros del Muerte.
Misioneros de la Muerte. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I hear
Los
they're like
Misioneros del Muerte.
I'm not going to be voting Lucha. Maybe some years down the line when I get more into Lucha. I saw an 80s Lucha match the other day that blew me away and may inspire me to really go down a Lucha wormhole over the next few years. But at the moment, I'm definitely not qualified to vote Lucha. But people who I know who are and have been talking about it, they are saying that that trio is maybe the biggest lock on the ballot as far as someone that should be in the Hall of Fame. Just on the point you're getting at, Todd, to steal a line from Dylan Hales, he's been saying that the Lucha category is more than any other category has shown that the voters in that category just have been unable to rally around a specific candidate, and they all have their own pet candidates. And if you ask like sort of three different sort of noted Lucha kind of experts who would be voters in the Hall of Fame, they all have a different pet candidate, be it Villano Tree or Cien Caras or even LA Park, I believe, is Steve Sims' pet candidate. So yeah, it seems like everyone has their favorite, and there's no one guy who's getting the lion's share of sports. It's not that one guy that's on all the ballots, and then maybe all the other guys are spread out. It seems like every one guy is kind of on some, but not on others.
Yeah, I mean, so to sort of tie it into sort of the larger point is that I do view these regions as sort of I do view them generally, because I think that there are sort of trends in each of the different regions, and the different regions I think are there are stronger and weaker regions. And to me, I don't see a real need to bring in a bunch of the Australian candidates, whereas I think that that a lot of the Mexican candidates should be brought in. So, yeah, I guess that was sort of my larger point I was trying to make on those. Alan appears. Sounds good. All right, so wrapping it up here,
Hello?
You're back.
Everyone still there? Oh, yeah. I didn't know you'd noticed me gone. I had to get my battery in my computer. Todd, you seemed geared up that you were going off on a tangent, so I was like, perfect time, I'll dash in and get the battery.
It's like Brian all over again. I sometimes
I sometimes suspect
that he just leaves the room mid-conversation.
Todd, no. It was the ultimate sign of respect that I valued your just this whole offering of your time so much that I didn't want it to be for naught by my computer crashing because of battery dying, so I had to make a quick dash, and I like left over a table, and there was all kinds of obstacles in my way, but I just inspired by the thought of how valuable you are to me, Todd, I just pushed it all out of my way. I grabbed that battery and I plugged it in as quick as I could, literally seconds before it was about to go off. It was a heroic feat, I might add.
I feel like we owe you a debt of gratitude, Alan. Congratulations.
It was quite the opposite to what you were thinking. So, my God, and honestly, it pains me that the first thing I'm going to do when we finish recording, before I even like upload the show, is go back to this part that I missed and re-listen to what you said and take notes on it.
Well, as I'm sure you'll see, we did a phenomenal job. Once we realized you were gone, we immaculately kept the thing going.
I don't know if you would classify it as 100% panic on a psychological scale, but it's like there's four sets of footprints on the beach, and then all of a sudden you had forsaken us, Alan, and we were so scared. Plus, the last time you had me host after I'd been doing my taxes during your entire Akiyama thing, I was woefully underprepared. So, Alan.
God, getting the taxes in early. Is this the taxes that you guys have to do in, like, April?
I'm well overdue.
Yeah,
I'm probably going to jail.
Oh, it's the April 2014 ones that are getting done? Oh.
It's going to be like '94 WWF. You're going to have someone come in and book for me.
Is it going to be the Homer Simpson giant ball taped together thrown in on the little trolley yoke as the door is closing?
Well,
then again, the door closed 3-4 months ago, so I don't know what you're going to do.
We like to joke around, but yes, I can tell you truthfully, yes. So,
where are we?
Well, I think we'd wrapped up Mexico and Australia, so we were going to move on to.
Are you voting Lucha, Todd?
Yes.
And who are your who are you going for?
This is quintessential Alvarez.
I don't have it here. I think I definitely went with Cien Caras and LA Park and Viano Tercero. I think I might have also added Carla Fugarte.
So you're not going with El Cino, El Tejano, and Negro Navarro, no?
I don't recall. It was Lagarde and Misioneros.
Oh, you sent in your ballot already? Yeah, you did say that, didn't you?
Yeah, I've got it written down somewhere here.
Okay.
I tend not to talk about a particular ballot, but you asked me directly, so I figure I'd just give you a direct answer.
I'm a straight shooter, Todd.
You're like an undercover cop where if someone asks you, you have to say. Narkin Martin.
Two candidates that we've talked about in pretty extensively in previous iterations of this show.
Well,
Brock Lesnar and Edge. I'm just going to briefly say a couple things on them. Brock, I think I've been a supporter of his every year. I continue to be. I think, and this is a point I wanted to raise, whether or not the storyline defeat of The Undertaker and winning of the streak is something that we can really give value to for Lesnar's credentials. And quite frankly, I think with the way people talk about the streak, it may be the most valued noted thing in wrestling in this era. And the fact that he was the guy that ended it, I think, yes, that feels just as important as any sort of, be it like multiple title reigns or whatever you'd want to give a guy in the 90s or 80s credit for. I think we have to give Lesnar huge credit for that. I think, granted, the match itself wasn't so hot, but I think he's redeemed himself with the first match at Cena, and hopefully the second match at Cena is another really, really great one, and we can really see this this current Brock run as being a positive towards his candidacy. But I've been on the Brock bandwagon even before this, so I'm continue to be there. Edge, I will say that I know Bix was wanting me to get into a debate on Twitter over Edge with him. I said, hold on till I do my show, listen to the points I make there, and then we can debate our hearts out. I'm sorry to disappoint Bix, but as late as we are in this show, I'm not going to get into a big Edge debate, but I will just kind of, well, he's not here to have the debate, but I won't get into a big
those
Edge.
Those are the best kind of debates, Sean, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those always work
speechless.
Well, I'm not going to get too much into my thoughts on Edge.
Would you like us to talk about
say, but...
Brock first, or do you want it to do it?
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, that actually, we'll go with that. Let's do Brock. So, just Brock for you. You were, Todd, let me, is my memory right in this, Todd, you were a no last year on Brock, and Justin, you were somewhere in the middle?
I remember Todd and me bullying you. Like the international bullies that America is.
You both were notes. Okay.
At least we didn't bomb him.
Well, we'll put together a coalition and see what they think. Now.
Troubles.
We got a better shot now that I realize that they're not controlled by the British.
They were just weighing us down anyway.
I have so many thoughts, but I'll just give you the regular answer. I think the real question, because, I mean, since we talked about Lesnar last year, he's had three matches, one with Big Show no one cares about, one with SummerSlam where, yeah, the buy rates, or whatever we call it now, I mean, they weren't even buy rates now, the buy type thing isn't even in for August WWE business, and I thought that match had a strong and unique, by WWE standards, build-up, so I'll be interested to see whether that was a significant thing as far as Lesnar. This Undertaker match, I think it was... The story is going to be whether beating him jump-started Lesnar's significant individual match drawing power and gave him like a fresh start after the jobs everyone criticized, and maybe rebuilt him as a unique drawing card. And we'll see how this run, and we record this like 6 days before, we don't even know whether they'll insanely have him lose a match right now, but if in theory he goes to WrestleMania as champion and loses it, then it'll be interesting to have this conversation last year, because that would be, I think, the defining statement of Lesnar's star power, drawing power on this run. The Mania thing was like an incredible post-match that followed a bad match that followed a bad build-up. So I guess it will go down as like a legendary moment, but right now I don't know if it changes his candidacy that much from when we talked about him last year. And at the same time, I think similar...
Do you not think that being seen by Vince McMahon and the promotion, the biggest promotion in the world, as the guy to take their most prized crown they had, the Undertaker streak, being selected as that guy, being seen at that level to do that, do you not see that as a huge plus for his candidacy?
Well, if nothing changes with his match-by-match drawing power, I might see it as a negative if they gave that to him.
If he got that and then he wasn't able to capitalize on it? Yeah. That's a fair point. Fair point.
So that's why I'll sort of be interested to see this run. With him as champion, which is certainly an interesting situation, we don't know how many matches he's going to have between now and April, or even like whether he'll actually hold it until then, as has been speculated. If he makes Roman Reigns into the next great man of this continent, then that's an interesting conversation. But similar to Punk, certainly Lesnar is one of like the most compelling figures of this era. But since he's only had three more matches from last year, when we said, to paraphrase, that to get in, it seems like you'd have to like do a little more, literally like perform the job of being a professional wrestler a little more than he has, then I think this run will probably make or break it for me. Although I can see like the fervor behind Brock being legit UFC dude who broke the streak, and I don't mean to damn that with faint paraphrase either, but I could see that picking up steam. We'll see. The end. Thank you.
Did Alan leave again? What it?
No, I'm here. I'm here awaiting my bullying. Come on, Todd.
What?
Complete the double team. Justin has picked me up on his shoulders. Now it's time for you to run in with the ace crusher.
Well, there is nothing I like better than a good double team. But, I mean, Brock is, it ultimately just comes down to longevity. I mean, as Justin said, he's had a very, he's had a remarkable career, but ultimately his professional wrestling career is 2 years and 8 matches. And, it's hard for me to put him in on that. I mean, I totally get why you would. I mean, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about the strength of having one thing that's really big. And he's, a really unique figure. But it's still such a short career. I mean, and granted, like, the John...
Well, hang on. He had the previous career, too.
Yeah, that was 2 years.
Oh, sorry, I see what you're saying. I thought you were saying 2 years, and he's been back 2 years and 8 matches within that 2 years. You mean the original 2 years and then 8 matches. Gotcha. I'm sorry. But he also has the UFC stuff for whatever you want to count that. But
yeah, and I don't really count that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean,
it's more than 2 years because he had New Japan as well, to be fair.
Yeah, I guess, but that wasn't terribly notable. And I mean, you could count the OVW stuff too, if you want to. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's created a lot of great memories. I mean, like that beatdown of John Cena was one of the highlights of my year. But I still can't vote for him.
Edge. Point I wanted to get at with Edge was his WrestleMania history, which. Again, Dylan, who we mentioned earlier, I know he was wanting us to talk about this and was interested in what I thought about this, but I'm a big supporter backer of what Edge has done at WrestleMania. I think he's had a very strong WrestleMania career, stronger than most, both in terms of he's been on a lot of WrestleManias, a lot more than most people have been on, which is something, but on the ones he's been on, I would class 2001. I would class 2000. I suppose I have these written down. 2001, 2006, 2008, 2009. I think all as really, really strong WrestleManias for him. I thought really, really good showings, really important to the cards. And actually, if you're talking important to the card, I'd throw 2000 in there too, because he was in arguably the only good thing on the card. Although what he did on that show, the Triangle Ladder match, was topped by what he did on the TLC the year after. I think as far as WrestleManias go, I think Edge has done real well. I wouldn't see that as a negative for his candidacy at all. For Edge, again, like we talked about last year, he gets my vote for just being...
Wait, Alan, hold on a second. Time out. This WrestleMania discussion, I don't really understand the context of what we're talking about. Like,
basically...
Are people arguing that he didn't have a great WrestleMania run?
Yeah, yeah. I'll pull up the exact quote. To just basically, yeah, that he... Edge's contributions to WrestleMania weren't as strong as you might think for a guy. It says, be sure to look at Edge's Mania career. For a, quote, top star, it's remarkably unimpressive.
Well, I mean, I guess it could be an issue of the cases being made that he wasn't a focal point on those WrestleManias. So it would go to sort of an argument that as far as him as like an attraction, that he was rarely one of the guys going in that was honed in on as one of the focal points of WrestleMania. I would think that would be the argument, because I don't think there's much of an argument that he didn't have great matches.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe from Dylan that would be the argument, too, because I know he's not a huge Edge fan. But I'd say it is probably more, as you're suggesting, to do with how he was promoted on those Manias. But I think, maybe I'm misremembering, but I would say the Mania where he main evented with Undertaker, like, they were obviously the key thing being built up on SmackDown leading into that Mania. On one brand, they were the top thing. And then on the following year, when it was a triple threat with, I think it was Cena and Big Show that year, that was, again, the main event program on one brand. So, and it's there with John Cena, who's the top star, so... I know you've got other things floating around, like Flair and Shawn and Mayweather and Big Show and things like that, but I don't know, when all the TV on SmackDown, one half of the promotion is built around this guy, I consider him a fairly important member of the WrestleMania roster in those years.
Yeah, looking at the cards... go ahead.
I was going to say, after 19 especially, it gets into kind of a buffet approach where there may be one like serious main event, like a Cena versus Rock, but they went with like four or five, well, maybe topping out at four matches with the usual crew of people it paired off as dance partners. They were pretty, pretty significant matches on Wrestling Manias. I don't know. It's an interesting conversation point I hadn't thought about. But to use it as a referendum on like his importance in the company or his place in the pecking order is a little arbitrary depending on the year, because, and I'm not saying you get credit for hypotheticals, but 22 was the year that a lot of people thought he should have kept the title and main evented with John Cena instead of giving it back to Triple H. And 2002? I meant 22. Anyway, 2007 was after Hunter got hurt. There were two plans, one to do Cena versus Michaels and the other to do Cena versus Rated versus RKO. So, and had he been in those matches, I don't know whether it actually is that changes his candidacy that much, because to me, he was just always a very useful and important player.
And to get to Edge's kind of the main argument I'd have for him, why I'd vote him in, and what I've already said before on these Hall of Fame shows, I just see him as one of the best all-around performers. Again, kind of like what Todd was saying about Punk, maybe not to the same degree Todd thinks on Punk, well, definitely not to the degree Todd thinks about Punk. I just see him as one of the best all-around performers in the biggest company in the world for a long period of time, carrying a brand, in SmackDown, and just a super reliable guy, and a guy who, again, when you talk about making a good impact on business, you talk to any of the younger wrestlers who dealt with Edge, it's you hear nothing but positive things. He's really thought of highly by people, and yeah, I just think he's a guy who made a great contribution to the WWE for a long period of time, and to me, it's a Hall of Fame level contribution. Yeah, Todd, go for it.
I didn't really have much to add. I don't view Edge as a super strong candidate, but he's someone that I think on balance belongs in. These are weird comparison points, but sort of like Rock and Roll Express, who I think, you know, I don't feel terribly strong about, but who I've, you know, sort of thought probably belonged in for a while as well.
And now I'm thinking, I mean, if timing left him out of some WrestleMania stuff or happenstance, he was in the 2006 SummerSlam main event. He was, let's see, 07. He would have been the world champion on SmackDown against Kane or Undertaker, but he was hurt. 2008, he was in the main event. 2009, he was hurt again, naturally. Would have been, I guess, tag champions with Jericho. And 2010, he was a, let's say, second in banana against the Nexus. So that's always prominent positions when he's not missing giant chunks from his body falling apart. And then from... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And when, so from the time he wins his first world title at the beginning of 2006, in order he worked with Cena as the co-main event on Raw, and then DX as the other co-main event on Raw, and then he was moved over to SmackDown to be in the main event against Batista, and then the main event against Undertaker, and then... Let me think here. The main event against Triple H.
There was a run with Cena.
And then Cena Part 2, and then Jeff Hardy. And then he got hurt, and then he came back and did Jericho. And that was sort of the end of his prime. So, I don't know. To me, he was always very important. But probably the tipping point for us Edge heads versus the non-Edge constituents would be probably how much you rate him on the subjective performance stuff, which is totally fair.
Yeah, and I see him as a great performer.
Because Batista, I think, has his draw. Excuse me, I'm getting a little choked up about poor Batista. No, Batista as a drawing card and importance to the company, Batista would probably rate higher than, well, almost certainly in that ensemble. They were both hurt plenty of times. But Edge is a better all-around performer, which I don't think is necessarily something you don't need to take into consideration in a Hardcore Wrestling Newsletters Hall of Fame. And there's some validity to that subjective stuff, because what do wrestlers like Steve Austin on his podcast talk about? It's not always drawing houses, but they will talk in detail and good analysis about subjective things that, like, best interviews, best wrestlers, best etc.
Okay, guys, we're running tight on time here, so let's try and get through a few more things as quick as we can. Non-wrestlers, Todd, main points you have about the candidates we have here this year in that category, of which you're able to vote up to 5 guys. And it's kind of the usual crew that we had last year, plus I believe Larry Madison got added to the ballot. Who else is new here? Gary Hart new this year? Or was he on there last year? He was on there last year. Yeah, Gary Hart's been there. Is it just Dave Brown and Larry Madison that are new?
I don't think Dave Brown's new either. I think he was on last year as well.
Okay, so it's just Larry. But, all right, non-wrestlers for me, I think Jimmy Hart's a super strong one. I think Gene Okerlund, for the arguments we made last year about Mean Gene, I think he is a very strong one. Gorilla I'm less high on. But I could see myself probably voting him again. And yeah, anyone else you wanted to mention, Todd?
I mean, not really. It's an interesting group. I don't know if any of them are really, if any of them I sort of view as like particularly strong candidates. But there's a lot of distinctive niches. You know, like Bill Afton and Stanley Weston. You know, the most important figures in the wrestling magazine business. Jesse Ventura, probably the greatest color commentary and the most important color commentator for sure in wrestling history. You know, Gene Okerlund.
Eric Finkel.
The best backstage announcer, Howard Finkel, one of the best, if not the best, ring announcer. So it's a lot of guys that had sort of, you know, distinct, and, you know, Jimmy Hart, Gary Hart, amongst, you know, the best managers there have been. So, I mean, they're all people that were very successful in their given little niche. The question is just how highly you value the importance of that niche within the larger context of the business. And I don't even really have, you know, strong answers on any of that. I guess that there's sort of one thought that I have that's sort of neither here nor there is I was listening to Dave and somebody talking about there are a limited number of candidates here talking about Jerry Jarrett the other day and sort of him as a candidate and people feeling him as a strong candidate. And I was thinking about why I've always viewed Jerry Jarrett as never really considered Jerry Jarrett as that strong of a candidate. And to me, like, what it ultimately comes down to is, like, we're used to, as wrestling fans, seeing wrestlers at the end of their careers and seeing them and saying, hey, you know, they're not very good, but not really holding it against them. Like, when I saw Dick Murdoch when I was first becoming a wrestling fan, he was terrible. He didn't care. He had this gigantic gut. You know, the first tapes I saw of him, I didn't make anything of him at all. But it was very easy to acknowledge, like, if you're going to say, well, what do you think about you know, Dick Murdoch as a performer overall? Be like, well, obviously I haven't seen enough to judge. I just saw him at the very end. And when wrestlers are at the very end, you can't, you know, they're obviously not going to be what they were in their prime. And I think everyone acknowledges that. So you see someone at the end and it doesn't really give you a sign as to how good they were in their peak because you're seeing at the end. But with creative people, I feel like you can get a better sense for what they were in their prime by what they were at the end. And Jerry Jarrett, for as successful as he was at his peak, I mean, the entire time that I have been following professional wrestling, in my opinion, every promotion Jerry Jarrett's been involved with has been bad, without exception. So I know that in a lot of those cases, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't as involved as he once was. But to me, if you're getting in for your creative stewardship of a promotion as a promotional genius, like, there ought to be something good in there. And I guess some people probably feel more highly about, I guess, some of that earlier USWA stuff at the beginning of the 1990s. But to me, I mean, it's just been a lot of bad stuff. And I mean, even with bookers that, you know, I think of sort of or past their prime, you still sort of see what they're doing, I think, when they're in charge. And with Jerry Jarrett, just, you know, like, it wasn't very impressive. And, you know, the two guys that were, you know, always credited as being the keys to that Memphis territory, that was a really well-booked territory, were Jarrett and Lawler. And, you know, the common wisdom that you hear a lot, and I wasn't there, but, you know, a lot of people say this, is that Jerry Jarrett was the guy that had the better ideas, and Jerry Lawler tended to have sort of weird or wackier ideas that weren't necessarily as good ideas for the territory. But I look at what those two guys have done since they left that territory, and Jerry Lawler has been involved in so many memorable angles. He's done so many great things. And Jerry Jarrett, since, you know, during the period that he's not been with Jerry Lawler, it's as I just said, he hasn't produced anything that's been good, in my opinion. So that's sort of my thoughts on Jerry.
What? I got to pull you up, Todd, as a known criticizer of Jerry Lawler in his WWE tenure. What are obviously the Bret feud was amazing. What else are we talking about there when we say all the great things that Lawler's done?
Whenever they involve him in an angle, I think he always does a phenomenal job with it.
Okay.
Even if it's
kind of one off kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean the you know, that feud with the Miz, where he was so good in that role, in my opinion, that, you know, like, there were people contemplating the idea of giving Jerry Lawler a short title run, you know,
yeah.
Like, the you know, whenever they bring him into the ring to do some sort of angle with someone or other, you know, the stuff that he did with Michael Cole. I mean, Michael Cole was irritating as shit, but Lawler did a great job of making you want to see him get his ass kicked. I mean, Jerry Lawler to me, you know, consistently, whenever they ask him the stuff with Jake Roberts, I mean, again, it wasn't like that was a headline feud, but he was tremendous in his role in that. Like, Jerry Lawler is able to, is able to make, you know, pretty much everything he does. And, well, he's obviously not what he once was as a color commentator, but he's very good at shooting wrestling angles.
And I think caricaturization of puppies and such he became in 1999, he and Jim Ross were massively visible and audible stars as the voices of the Attitude Era. And I would say he didn't really stop caring and get really out to lunch until after he came back in 2001 after he was terminated.
Any other non-wrestler points you had to make?
I think it was Dylan Hales, who I thought just did a lovely job talking about Jimmy Hart with Joe Gagne, and if it wasn't, I'm super sorry.
It was Dylan on with Joe, and I completely agree with what he said about Jimmy Hart. I think Jimmy Hart is a pretty strong lock, as he's up there in my sort of Akiyama, Hamada tier of first names on the ballot for me.
Okay, it just, we've been inundated with a lot of detailed pitches, so I wanted to make sure I had that right and give credit where it was due. And just my only general statement about the non-wrestlers is, aside from the promoters, you sort of get into a Noah's Ark. Did I make that analogy last year? It's a Noah's Ark thing of, does your Hall of Fame need one of this and one of this and one of this? So do you want the best referee, the best announcer, the best midget wrestler, the best jobber, and the distinction...
The best podcast host.
Ooh.
And you really want,
I'll fight Austin for that.
You really want with one of each gender, so
yes,
that makes it trickier too.
Ooh, I've got bad news and, for Renee Young, because she'll be procreating with Gene.
She owns a podcast, right?
Oh no, yeah, that's right. So she could double dip like Flair in the WWE Hall of Fame. I would just say, so to decide between those, like when you get to a Gene Okerlund or a Howard Finkel, you would just kind of say, well, they were the best at their job. Did they demonstrably help or enhance the business or the stars who they worked with? And I've heard arguments for both those guys, whereas maybe less so with a referee who may have been a great referee.
And
but
I think I made this point last year that I bring fame into it more on this category than I do the wrestler categories. So in the case of Gene, just how famous he was, I think makes a difference. But
no, he had a very prominent poem written about him last year. So
I'm not aware. But,
okay.
Just a few last little quick bullet points from me. Ivan Koloff, voting him again this year. Just want to point people in the direction of a 2-hour interview that he did on the Titans of Wrestling podcast at Place to Be Nation, which, my God, it was so good, and he was so amazing on this, and it made me wonder why he hasn't been doing more interviews and more podcasts and stuff like that, because he was just an absolute treat to listen to. Dear old Ivan Koloff just seemed like the loveliest guy, who had the absolute like best of intentions in his whole career in wrestling, and it seemed like he just really loves what he did, really, really wants to give the fans their money's worth, wanted to do good by the promotions he was working for and the wrestlers he was working with, and he just seemed to have an all-around great attitude to the business and very humble about his accomplishments, but it was clear in what he was talking about and stuff that you're just like, God damn, this guy did a whole hell of a lot and was quite the traveler and was a star everywhere he went. And in that kind of list of guys, I'm fairly or I'm 100% sure I'll have on my ballot, and they're not in any danger of being replaced. Yuji Nagata didn't make any mention of him. Very strong on him. Not as strong as I am on Akiyama, but very strong, and he'll be on my ballot. Gran Hamada, reasons I talked about last year, solidified by doing a lot of research for the Michinoku Pro article, which I did in Fighting Spirit magazine late last year, talking to people like Ultimo Dragon and Great Sasuke in sort of preparing that article, and Mr. Udagawa, who was the head of the office of Michinoku Pro and Hamada UWF back in the 90s. The idea of Hamada's influence on that whole style really reiterated. And to be honest, I'm really thinking that, like, wrestling as a whole would look very different when you see guys like Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins and people like that who've come through the American indies, which were so influenced by the style that Hamada created. When you see those guys as kind of top guys in WWE, and when you see a guy like Okada, who's pretty much like two generations removed from, or actually would be one generation removed from Hamada, because you got Hamada, who trained Ultimo, who trained Okada. So, like, he's like the top guy in Japan now. So it's that Ultimo or that Hamada lineage is just kind of carrying on.
But do you think if Hamada hadn't been there, that Sayama wouldn't have broken out the way that he did?
No, because Sayama was, he kind of got out of it and then went more into the shoot kind of style stuff, and he wasn't going to push on the next crop like Hamada did. Hamada went and created his own promotion to give the guys he was training a place to work, and then the guys he was training all branched off and did all these different things, and the guys like Ghetto and Jado, who he trained, they're now the bookers in New Japan, and they obviously had great careers, but like, he trained Ultimo, and then all the guys who went on to, like Sasuke, who went on to form Michinoku Pro, and Hamada was a key part of Michinoku Pro, and then Dragon Gate comes from all that.
The reason I brought up Sayama, though, is that if you, like, there's sort of two different ideas. One is the idea of direct training, right? I'm teaching you to wrestle, you know, like, Vern and the people that he had working behind the scenes, Billy Robinson, those guys, teaching guys to wrestle. There's the other, which is sort of implanting the idea of wrestling a certain way. And to me, the latter is more important than the former. It's more important to the guy that inspires people to want to work a certain way. And even if you don't have the direct trainer that will train them to work that sort of way, they'll find a way if they're inspired by that, you know, by that sort of work, whether it's, you know, the Hardys working in their backyard or, you know, whoever it is. So to me, like, Sayama, like Hamada, went to Mexico, put in that style, and then brought it to Japan and blew up. And he was the one that was more key, I think, in probably, putting the germ in the minds of Japanese kids that they want to work in that way.
But I think he – okay, so this is going to be a really weird 2 a.m. analogy. So Sayama is like the crop being – it's going to come out how little I know about agriculture here. Hamada, or what's his name? Sayama. Tiger Rat. Satoru Sayama. Sayama was like the crop, like, going into the field, and it would have just kind of sat there, and people would have maybe looked at it and maybe taken something from it and maybe not really understood it, and it wouldn't have really amounted to anything. But Hamada was the crop going into the field and then sowing it and reaping what you sow and sowing it again and then this and that and cultivating all these lovely cows or crops or
cows.
I don't know how it works.
So you're bringing methane into this?
How do you feel about GMOs in this context?
I don't know, Todd. Todd, I love you, Todd. Justin, I love you too.
Prohibited under DDP yoga.
So, that's if anyone wants to engage more on that debate or any other debate on the board, I'll be in a better position to engage tomorrow when I'm pretending to work at work and I'm actually on the board.
Don't turn in Alan, people.
Actually, I'm probably going to be pretty busy tomorrow, unfortunately. And I'm up at fucking 2 a.m. and now I need to get a few hours sleep.
We appreciate you making our time. Cause
I know I'm throwing it in there as much as possible and make you really feel bad.
And we as Americans are used to things being revolving around our schedules.
As it happens now, I'm probably not going to be able to upload this tonight. Anyways, so it'll be tomorrow. Then everyone will be listening to it. So, let's see. Is there anyone else? Volcan. I've kind of been beefing up my Volcan knowledge a bit recently and watching more of his stuff. He's one of those guys in the cutoff. Probably not going to vote for him. I don't think. I think he mainly comes down to how good he was within the style. And yeah, there's a very strong argument he was the best in the style. But it's Jeremy Wall wrote a great piece on Volcan, and I pretty much agreed with what he kind of came out with in that. And that was just like, if you think he's far and away the absolute best there ever was of the style, like far and away, then maybe that's your reason for voting for him right there. But if you think he was the best, but like other guys are right up there close, like maybe Gary Albright or Tamura or whoever you want to pick, even Vader is awesome with the style, then maybe Han shouldn't just go in for that. So yeah, I think that's everything for me. Justin, any kind of things you want to whisk around before we sign off?
I just have such a wonderful time with you guys, and we should make plans to meet here at the same time next year and talk about Sting's WrestleMania match and do the Sting thing all over again.
I think we exhausted Sting.
Yeah, but the definitive Sting statement might be coming.
Oh, Wrestling Culture. I'm just plugging all these other podcasts. Wrestling Culture with Dave Musgrave, our good pal, and Dylan. They brought in a brave man. I can't remember his name right now, but they basically put a call out for anyone who was willing to come on and debate Dylan, which is a tough
was it Andy
tough position
Andy
to take.
Napier.
That sounds like it might have been. Why, it's definitely a name I've heard recently on something, so I think it was probably that. They challenged someone to come on, debate Dylan, who was very much anti-Sting in the Hall of Fame, and they ended up with a great show out of it, a really good-hearted, good-spirited debate, and both sides had some really good points, so I'd recommend listening to the Sting show on Wrestling Culture. Todd.
Very interesting.
Any kind of
Sting.
Yeah, I'd like to plug Star Talk Radio and the other Cross Tyson. Limited amount of discussion, but Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. But a fine podcast otherwise. And I'm still waiting for the Observer Hall of Fame episode. So that may be coming.
Hey, biggest stars get in, right?
There you go. Perfect. And you got the universe, all sorts of tie-ins to contemporary pro wrestling.
I've heard of a son of a promoter, but promoter of a son? Boy, we've been doing this for a while.
That wasn't bad at all. As far as Volcan goes, because like people wanted us to talk about Volcan, just to say a little bit more, like I get why people are into the idea of Volcan for the Hall of Fame, because he's a fun candidate. Like, he's just a fun dude. Like, he's this guy, you know, who's this old grizzled Russian Sambo guy who gets into working pro wrestling matches with, as far as I know, no experience at it. And he became really good really quickly at being able to have, memorable worked pro wrestling matches in a shoot style.
Straight away, his first match was incredible.
Absolutely. I was actually watching that the other night with Maeda.
Yeah, me too.
And then they're like, okay, we're going to switch this up. We're going to make it a shoot. And he's like, all right, motherfucker, I'll shoot with you too. And he goes in there and he's a really good shooter too. I mean, I mean, what a badass. I mean, that was sort of the beginning of the transition of those, you know, Russian Sambo guys who, you know, most famously, you know, Fedor Emelianenko. You can sort of link up as sort of a, you know, successor to Volk Han. So, you know, on top of having an awesome name. So, yeah, I mean, I get the argument for Volk Han. I mean, yeah, I mean, I've always thought he's an interesting and unique candidate. And it's sort of, he's actually, it's sort of weird. He's sort of like the non-wrestler candidates in the sense that he's got a very distinct little niche. And it's sort of what you ultimately make out of that niche, and it's sort of importance to the larger context of pro wrestling.
Before we go, I just remembered we had something very special to talk about, non-Hall of Fame related, to end the show. I want all you listeners to do me a favor, and I want you to go on YouTube and, as Steve Austin would say, go into the search bar and type in A Day in the Life of Nord the Barbarian, part one. There's a part two there also.
How do you get to the part two?
It should be right there to the right.
Okay.
A Day in the Life of Nord the Barbarian. Yes, that is what I said. The greatest thing I've seen on YouTube in years. I can't believe I'd never seen this before. Like, this seemed like prime material for, like, 2006 when, like, the Iron Sheik videos took off and all this kind of stuff. This would have just been one of those things that back when there wasn't a million things out there to just kind of, like, every minute there is, like, nowadays just, like, a different thing being sort of trending or whatever. Back in 2006 when YouTube was new and you'd have one thing get really popular and blow up and it'd be all everything would talk about for, like, 2 months. This would have been a candidate for that. This is incredible stuff. Nord the Barbarian, otherwise known as the Berserker in WWF. This is a mini movie kind of thing, following him around in his day-to-day life in character. And he's going to the grocery store, and he's eating breakfast, all these other things. He's just amazing. And I guess it was an advertisement for, like, his family's used car sales business. Todd, what were your thoughts upon seeing this?
I mean, he was a very energetic figure. I don't know what those were originally taped for, but those are some wacky vignettes of him suplexing people on cars and having this gigantic bowl of cereal. It was, I feel like, you know, over the years, WWE has, you know, has really sanitized a lot of people. They took Jim Duggan and, you know, they turned him into this goofy guy with the snot on his nose. And they, you know, they gave the great Tyler Black as his slave name of Seth Rollins. They took John Nord of these great vignettes and they turned him into the one-note berserker. It's a real shame because there was so much nuance and class, I think, to the Nord of the Barbarian gimmick that just didn't translate when he became the berserker.
McMahon's circus.
Yes, he needed to stick to the wrestling like Nord did back in the good old days.
Absolutely, well said.
I like the running thing throughout the video where, like, the slogan of the car company was like, you do this or you do this, we don't care. You do that, we don't care. You're late with your payments, then we care. And then he'd, like, slam a guy through a window, but it would be like they'd, like, shoehorn that in loads of different parts of the video. Like, he was going through the supermarket paying for his stuff and he was like, I ate a steak on the way around. Little cashier is like, we don't care. I drank a liter of milk on the way around. We don't care. I don't have any money. Then we care. And then he pulls out his $3,000 loan that he had taken out earlier in the day to pay for his groceries. And he pulls out this piece of paper and he goes to the little cashier lady.
I had you there, and he winks to the camera, and she's like, oh, Nord, you're so funny. It's just fantastic stuff. Go watch it, people. So, yes, that's the DKP. I will be putting this up at some point tomorrow, and I want to thank everyone for listening today as you listen. Tomorrow, I'm confused. I'm trying to sell my tiredness. I'm not really that tired. I'm just a great seller. Justin, Todd, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
That too.
Everyone, thanks for listening. It's been another Hall of Fame show. And we'll be back.
Hall of Fame.
I was gonna go see them last weekend, and then I thankfully got out of it, so I didn't have to go see them. We ended up selling the tickets. Hooray! So,
a ringing endorsement.
I don't even know what the words are before the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I actually asked the other day. I was told what they were, and I forget them again. So,
is in the Hall of Fame.
I was doing that too. It was not greeted with a great reception. I think it was, should I vote for Khan in the Hall of Fame? I just don't know. He's so good. I was completely going off what the song actually sounded like. I have to do karaoke next week, lads. And there are people listening who know my experience with karaoke, who have seen me in action. And it's not a pretty sight. I'm thinking I'm going Girl on TV by LFO, the Light Funky Ones. You know that video with Jennifer Love Hewitt in it? I was looking through, it's a little Japanese bar in town, and we were looking at the song list and work, and I was just going through, I was like, geez, they've got all kinds of random stuff, and then I saw LFO, Girl on TV, and like, boom, that's my song.
By the She-Wolf.
Since we're talking about Sting and karaoke, how much of Sting's song do you think you could get, Justin? The This Is Sting song?
He's
a
Sting.
Man called Sting.
Yeah, man called Sting.
He wrestles in a ring.
It's a man called Sting.
I can tell you four things about Sting.
He does this.
He does that. He's as big as
a strong as an ox and quick as a cat.
As to a lesser extent. Quick as a cat. Those were some good songs. Cody Rhodes sang
fine.
The natural.
Looks cool. If you mess with this man, you... Wow, what was it?
He'll take you to school.
Probably. And all the kids, they go wild. And all the old people start to act like a child. Don't you dare cross him or get in his way. Because if you do, you're going to have to pay to the man called Sting.
That is
Here's a story about two brothers, Rick and Scott. They did something in college, and then they wrestled a lot. Yeah, they didn't take steroids. They were all clean. If you get in the way, they're going to give you a Steiner lean line.
The Chaucerian
Steiner line.
Sting song is kind of like Footloose, Kick Off Your Sunday Shoes, where you...
I love that song.
The bars are so short that I would accidentally add fake ones, such as, like, Good Eats, Cool Treats, da-ba-da-ba-da, Footloose. And the equivalent for Sting that I would always end up saying was, like, he does right, he does wrong... He's big as a bull, and he's so damn strong. And
shades of gray.
Yeah. So
really?
He doesn't do wrong ever, except for that month under Russo, and that other month under Russo later. So anyway.
I think that's going to wrap it up.
Hey,
so,
Dave, how about next year you just surprise everybody and move the date to 40 years old? Why not? Did it this year.
Do you think Dave listened
nope.
this year?
Dave, listen, 40 years old, you say you want, like, conversation about people close to their primes, but the problem is that conversation is often subpar, and now that you have this death rule, you're actually wasting people's years of eligibility by putting them on the ballot too soon. So,
ooh,
hey,
that's
man.
That's a strong point.
Ho-ho! Mic drop.
Mics don't generally explode when they drop.
I have Justin's on a timer just in case he gets out of order.
Filibuster the end of the show, Alan. Just shut us down.
Oh, bye, everyone. See ya. Take care. Oh, it's a free show. Plugs.
Oh!
Maybe. Might be free show. I can't remember. Let me check on that. So, yeah. Everyone knows the website. F4WOnline.com, WrestlingObserver.com. Hey, everybody, it is Alan. I am back here about 24 hours since we were recording. I am refreshed, and I am in a much better state of mind to give the free show plugs, as we usually do, and sign off here. So, yeah, a little cleaner ending to the show than we had yesterday, I thought was in order. But, yeah, so this is F4WOnline.com and WrestlingObserver.com. If you are new to the website, if you're just checking us out, make sure you look around the rest of the site, see what's on offer, see all the great stuff you can get for your money every month. We've got the Wrestling Observer newsletter, the rebooted Figure 4 weekly newsletter, great work done by David Bixenspan. I'll be writing in there as always, Dr. Lucha, Steve Sims. So yeah, you got that newsletter is doing great stuff right now. You've got all the radio shows on the website with Dave and Brian and Vinny and Adam and Mike, Carl Stern, Figure 4 dailies that Brian will do with various guests from around the pro wrestling industry, and much more in that regard. And we've got the message board, and we've got, which is of course home of some great Hall of Fame discussion, which is the point of this show here today. And yeah, so lots to get for your money here at F4W Online and WrestlingObserver.com. So please check us out some more. And thank you for listening, DKP. Bye, everyone. I'm wishing I'm falling down. She means to me, I fell for the girl that's on TV. Wish
wondering where you